Show. Shapeshifters.
Oh my goodness me, you're in for a treat for the next 20 minutes or so. Solly Kramer is in studio. I want your comment on this and the QI elves. Do you know who the QI elves are in the United Kingdom? They're the quite interesting company and they do TV shows and podcasts and all sorts of things, and they're on Twitter. And their tweet this evening was, a $5 bottle of wine tastes better if you pay $45 for it. Is that true?
I would say definitely it rings very true. People often taste by price and are convinced. There's a lovely story about the couple that go off to Italy on holiday and come back to me with a bottle of wine or a label of the bottle of wine. Have you got this wine? You say, yes. This exact wine. You say, let me see. And you bring it to them. They buy two cases. But they're back 5 days later. It doesn't taste the same. Because they're not in Italy and they're not eating beautiful food and they're back home with the kids and things are different.
The best beer I've ever had was a glass of Duvel on a Sunday morning sitting in the Belgian village of Ypres, which was flattened in World War One and then rebuilt from photographs afterwards. And the church bells were ringing and my wife was doing business and I had some free time. So I sat in this beautiful square in Ypres and I drank possibly the most exquisite drink I've ever had. And Duvel's a nice beer, but it's never been the same again. I understand completely.
Well, the only French I know is De Stella, s'il vous plaît. From sitting on the square in Mons in Belgium, which, in my early days at university.
And the best Stella's ever. Again, it's a lovely beer. Absolutely. But it's not going to be the same.
100%.
Sitting as the square in Mons. So we accept that is true. Solly Kramer is our shapeshifter this evening. You would have seen his name in Parkhurst over a bottle store. And at one point, you would have seen his name over about 160 bottle stores across the country. But it's not your name. Although your name is Solly Kramer, it's the legacy of your grandfather.
100%.
He arrived in South Africa, like so many people in probably, the 1910s?
Early 1900s.
Early 1900s, from Lithuania.
Correct.
As an immigrant.
Yes.
And set up a business, as so many Lithuanian immigrants did back then. Tell me his story.
He set up a little tobacconist store in just off Market Street.
In downtown Joburg.
That grew into the first bottle store, first of the Solly Kramer bottle stores. And in 1929, he actually stood for the Nationalist Party.
Well, you've got to be careful about that. Hold on a second. It was the National, not the Nationalist Party.
Yes, the National Party, correct.
It was sort of J.B.M. Herzog days against Jan Smuts.
That's
1929. It was that era, not the 1948.
God.
And well, why would he have stood as a politician when he's an entrepreneur and starting a business?
I think he saw the chance of having his poster up all over town, and everyone then knew who he was and came into his store and chatted to him. He worked 22 hours a day. He used to sleep there. He hardly ever went home. And
did he become a member of parliament?
No, he lost his deposit.
So he was a lousy politician.
Yes, but a good advertising guy, because it was cheaper to lose the deposit than to have to pay for all his posters up around town.
So and have you got that blood in you? Have you got that entrepreneurial zeal?
I like to think that I got that from my dad as well. Yeah, my dad was amazing.
Okay, we'll get to your dad. Okay. We'll get to your dad, because you didn't ever meet Solly, the original Solly.
No.
He died when your dad, I think your dad, youngest of seven kids, was
correct,
about 16 or so.
100%.
Okay, so, I mean, you didn't meet the great Solly Kramer, but he said he created an empire, and at its peak, that empire had something like 150, 160
stores. When he died, there was only the one store.
Really?
Yes. So then my dad and his brother opened a few more stores, and they were bought out in the mid-60s by SFW, Stellenbosch Farmers Winery, who had then Wineland stores. And they turned the 16 Wineland stores nationally into Solly Kramer's. And then 6 months later, SAB bought SFW. And they had about 30-odd stores called SABR, SAB Retail, which they then turned into Solly Kramers.
So suddenly Solly Kramers became a national
chain. My dad said it was like going to bed with Mary and waking up with Jane. All of a sudden he was in the SAB camp. But having said that, him and his brother then, with SAB, built it up to 165 stores.
So your dad actually worked for the company?
Yes, he was very much part of it, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And where did it all go wrong? Because today, there are only a handful of Solly Kramer stores.
There's a great book by Michael Fridgeon called The Conspiracy of Giants, where it's very well explained. But it was legislated in the early 70s that there could be no more vertical integration in the liquor industry. Because in those days, you had SAB, who owned Stellenbosch Farmers Wine.
Well, everybody owned everything because of sanctions, and they couldn't invest elsewhere. They couldn't go global at that time.
Possibly.
So Anglos owned 70% of the market, and SAB probably owned the other.
Well, you had the SAB beverage camp, and you had the Rupert beverage camp.
True. That was Kronenbrau 1308.
And yes. Also the Odermeister and all the products that the Rupert Group had in those days, which is now Distell.
Okay, so you've got this. So during the 1970s, the legislation changes, and...
And they broke up Solly Kramers into... They had to sell it off, and they sold it off to certain staff members. That there was a management buyout, and it was split up. And unfortunately, it hasn't lasted as a brand, it's very unfortunate.
Tell me about the day, not using the fruity language, but you were at school one day. Where were you at school?
I was at Parktown Boys.
Parktown Boys High.
Yeah.
And the next thing, you get called to the office, which
I get called to the office
is never a good thing.
No. About 11 o'clock, and the headmaster says, your father's here to see you. And I had to put on my blazer, and he put me in the car and drove me to 2 Jan Smuts Avenue, SAB head office. And obviously things weren't going well at that stage with this management buyout.
Because he was working for SAB,
yes,
managing this business.
And he wasn't part of this management buyout.
Ah.
And he walked me into the boardroom at 2 Jan Smuts, there were obviously about 6 or 7 people sitting in there, and he sat me down and he said,
You're 16 years old.
Yes. Okay. And he never primed me for this. And he said, I've brought my son here to show him never to be treated like the way you guys have treated me. And he walked out and he took me back to school. And it was only later on in my life.
So was it, what, a 60-second interaction?
That's all, 60-second interaction.
And what was his goal?
It was more, I think he used the word bullied.
And another word which we can't say on the radio.
And another word which we can't say.
In a boardroom.
In a boardroom.
And was he satisfied? Was he happy with himself?
I think a certain satisfaction. Mm. But you know what? It landed up as they then gave him as a golden handshake, the Illovo bottle store.
I want to get to the Illovo bottle store in a second. Okay. So he takes you into this boardroom for a 60-second interaction with some of the most powerful business people in the country at that moment. He uses powerful language at them and says, I brought my son here so that he doesn't get messed around like you've messed me around into the future. And you go, I don't know what just happened, but I'm so glad to go back to maths or whatever it was that you were going
very
to
much so, very much so.
And later on, what did you realize that he'd done to you?
Well, I think that the odd thing that I remember him saying in the car going back is that try and own your own business.
And it was around that time that Raymond Ackerman got screwed over by Greatermans. And, I mean, it's roughly at that sort of time as well, where Raymond Ackerman was growing Checkers.
Yes, yes.
And Greatermans had bought Ackerman's, and he worked for Greatermans, and they stabbed him in the back. And he did... then resolved to go and start his own business.
Oh, very much so.
Your dad then, out of this severance package, gets a single bottle store on a location on...
100 square meters.
100 square meters,
yeah.
In Illovo.
Yes.
And that is the base
of today's
business.
It was
the worst
single store out of the 165 stores.
And your dad's name is Norman.
Correct.
And you were one of the good fellows.
Well, yes, he loved... The thesaurus, and worked around a lot to get this Goodfellow name. I think that, you know, in those days there were, it was the retail liquor trade was very Jewish dominated. So there was the Benny Goldbergs, there was the Solly Kramers, and he wanted to have something different. So his name being Norman, and then he had Goodfellow by appointment to the neighborhood Ilova bottle store.
And that is the base of operations for Norman Goodfellows today. The chief executive of Norman Goodfellows is Solly Kramer, the grandson of Solly Kramer. We could make it more complicated than that, but we're not going to. Solly Kramer, our shapeshifter this evening.
The Money Show, Shapeshifters.
Our shapeshifter is Solly Kramer. His father got the worst shop, the worst Solly Kramer's shop in the SAB portfolio as a farewell gift, and he created Norman Goodfellows. And he, by appointment to the neighborhood, suggests good old-fashioned local retail. Was he on the floor? Did he manage it personally?
Always on the floor. Loved being behind the counter. I think that's what he missed in his days at Solly Kramer's. He really missed being behind the counter, interacting with people. That's what he loved.
Was he big on service?
Great on service. There's a lovely story. Mrs. Jones would phone up from Ethel and order a dozen beers, a bottle of whiskey, and some Coke. And my dad would write the order. I'd quickly give it to the bicycle man, who would run it down while my dad kept talking to Mrs. Jones on the phone. She'd say, "Hold on, Mr. Cromwell, there's someone at the door." And she said, "Oh, it's your delivery." You know, he loved doing those type of things.
But can you still do that today? I don't think you can you? Are the pressures different?
It is different. We try and maintain that type of personal service.
Because you do have your A-list of clients. I happen to know a couple of people on that A-list who will phone you up and say, yes, we need X number of cases, we need this, that, the next thing, and the delivery comes, and that ethos, that service ethos, yes, that was started by your dad is maintained. But you've got to be loyal.
It's a lot harder because we've spread our wings. We've got we national now. We're in Cape Town and Durban.
And that's fairly a recent development, though, isn't it?
Cape Town over the last 5 years, and Durban over the last 18 months.
Because even 10 years ago, there was only the one Norman Goodfellows. Now you've gone to Melrose Arch.
Melrose Arch, new store in Kyle Army Corner. They say it's the best looking retail liquor store anyone's ever. It's quite an amazing bottle store. Two in Cape Town with a big warehouse distribution center, as we do in Johannesburg. And there's a new one coming in Umhlanga now in about 3-4 weeks opening.
Why this sudden expansionary zeal?
I think that, in a funny way, Bruce, the Norman Goodfellow name is a very strong name nationally today. When we send our brochure out, and used to only be from Johannesburg, we used to get orders from all over the country. We used to put it into Business Day nationally. And
yeah,
and the demand in Cape Town has been remarkable. Our growth in Cape Town is absolutely remarkable.
That's where lots of money is.
A lot of money in Cape Town. And Durban's been great.
Now, take me, you've just issued the catalogue, and I've got it in black and white. I haven't even got the colour one yet. Does anybody ever buy the really expensive whiskies, or do you just put them in there to upset me? I mean, upset people generally, to say, no, you'll never afford this at 26,000 rand a tot for a 50-year-old Balvenie.
Believe it or not, yes, people do buy it.
They buy them to drink, or do they buy them to put away and sell back to you?
You get the different type of people. Most people buy it to drink.
At 26,000 rand a tot.
They'll drink it. You know, it's everything's relative, isn't it?
And of course it is. Yeah. Of course it is. I mean, do you sell more than one a year?
Very much so. Very much
to the same customers every year.
Often a repeat sale, whether it's given as gifts or drank with their friends. Yes, it happens.
Who?
A lot. That I cannot reveal, Bruce.
Do they come in and collect themselves, or do you have to deliver it wearing a black cloak in the middle of the night?
With no price on the invoice in case girlfriend or the wife sees the price.
Or both.
No, we do a lot of deliveries, but a lot of people like coming for this type of thing would come in, yeah. Look, often it goes along with a special trip for two to Scotland, a business class trip to Scotland, to the to the distillery.
You got that going with the Glenlivet at 650,000 rand.
Yeah, you know? So, that's, you nice. Know, it's experiential as well, I suppose.
Yeah, look, if you got the bucks, yeah. People will spend it. But that's the niche you've crafted for yourselves. You're not the place where people go at 4 o'clock on a Friday to pick up a bottle of Clippies and a 2-litre Coke. You've created a different kind of experience.
We like to think that we've created a different type of retail shopping experience. And I think we have, I think that if you go into Lovo, it's an interesting store. And it, most people who work there know, would know who you are, and they'd come and recommend things. And yes, there's a lot of knowledge within that store and the people working there.
Mm. I mean, what sort of, when you look at the economy, I would think that you're quite a useful barometer for the economy, because one gets the data and the statistics, but you will see 6 months before business confidence dips that sort of directors of companies have gone from Mouton Rothschild and are now going to Rupton Rothschild. You know, you've seen that they still want the Rothschild name on a bottle, but have scaled back.
You know, Bruce, we've been going for 42 years. We've never had a month on month where we haven't grown in double digit figures. It is quite remarkable. But however, what I will say is our mix is from Coca-Cola cans to Royal Salute,
yeah.
63-year-old. You know, it's we sell everything. There's some interesting numbers that I can give you, very up-to-date numbers on the current where the liquor trade is going. So if you look at whiskey over the last year, there's only been a 4% growth in 9-liter cases.
In volume. So
in volume, okay. Yes. In fact, that's premium whiskey. If you look at prop whiskey, which is Bell's, Johnny Walker, that J&B, there's been a 5.7% drop in volume. And if you, whiskey overall is a 3.4% drop in volume. And it's, what is interesting is that brandy is coming back a little bit. There's a 4.7% growth in brandy, mainly driven by cognac.
Okay. Cognac, but again, it's the top end.
Top end.
How competitive are local pot still brandies, which are the process, as in Cup Classique, is the same process as champagne.
Quality wise, they are
comparable.
However, there's something about drinking international brands and global brands, and the way the global brands manage themselves
and show, people like to show off the global.
There is that to a certain degree, but if you look at the real growth in the alcohol category, it's been in global brands. So originally, over the last 20 years, brandy, South African brandy, took quite a knock. Mm. Whereas the interesting is that gin is growing at 28%.
The trend is finally hit South Africa, and it's so local, and the barriers to entry in gin are actually, in terms of the booze category, quite low, because you're not having to age stuff. No. You can create the spirit, add the flavorings, and bottle it, put a pretty label on it, and charge a lot of money.
The interesting one is that vodka does 2.7 million 9-liter, that's 12 bottle cases a year. In South Africa, if you look at the whole whiskey category, it's only 3.5 million cases. Vodka's strong, but it's not growing. It's strong in volume, but it's not growing very much.
And one gets the sense of it. One looks at the advertising, and suddenly one sees Belvedere and Grey Goose and these top brands being advertised. And it's all the same stuff. It either comes from wheat or potatoes or something. Forgive my ill trained palate, but with vodka, it's clear, and it's spirit, and it's
odorless, colorless, and tasteless.
But people will pay for the brands.
They do. There's no question. And you know, today the mixability. The number of tonics that have come out, the artisanal tonics, pink tonics. And
how much of it is rubbish? How much of it is?
No.
I mean, it's for to impress your friends and stuff. But are you sitting at home and you have Gordon's and Schweppes and you've got a great gin and tonic?
I beg to disagree, because I think if you poured yourself a, let's say, Inverosh and a Fitch and Leeds pink tonic, it's very different.
It is very different. Very different. It is very different.
Yeah.
But is it? The price. So is the price point.
Definitely. But that's what makes it, doesn't it, to a certain degree. Yeah. I mean, that, you know, it's, you know, Bruce, if you look at the wine category.
We haven't even got to wine. No. Oh.
It's the only category that's not really thriving. And we're a wine-producing country.
At least our exports are growing in wine, which is good. But yeah, it is strange. I mean, do people just not see the value of wine relative?
No, Bruce,
I mean,
it's my gripe. It's that if the real growth in the beverage category has been in the main market, the new emerging main market, and it's a massive growth. The wine people sit in Cape Town, and they don't really understand the main market. The emerging main market, and try and market to the emerging main market without really understanding it.
Chivas has got such broad appeal in South Africa, and that's why the whiskey category has taken off.
And Johnny Walker,
yeah, Chivas. Huge.
But if you think about it, Johannesburg, whether it be in Newtown, should have a massive Cape Wine Center where all the wine guys come along, put something together, bring wine to the people. You know, not all of us can go down to the farm.
But then you can't sit in Cape Town and whinge about the fact that nobody buys your product.
Very much so.
Sorry, Cromer, what a lovely chat. And thank you so much for coming in. He is the chief executive of Norman Goodfellows. The catalogue, which I've got. And I'm willing to sell you if you're willing to pay for it. We'll be releasing your business day fairly soon, and of course be made publicly available. But you know it, Christmas is coming fast when the Norman Goodfellows catalogue comes out. Sorry, thank you.
Thank you, Bruce. Thank you.